You are tuned to Set Live, broadcasting from Southern California, every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is Internet Live Radio. Thank you for listening all across the nation and beyond. Join me, Suzette LT, and share your comments and opinions about topics and events, big and small, every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. blogtalkradio.com/Suzette Live Talk. All right. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining me, Suzette LT, for another episode of Suzette Live Talk on Saturday night at 8 p.m., broadcasting from the coast, the West Coast, that is. So I'm hoping all is well with you all, with all of you, and that you're recuperating well from Thanksgiving holiday, unless you were fortunate enough to have the entire weekend plus off. There are some that actually need that time to recoup before returning back to work. So tonight we have the talk of the town topics. The main topic being net neutrality 101. And the other minor two topics that have been grabbing the airwaves these days. As you may have read my description of the show, filling the airwaves with a lot of hot air. Pray tell. Anyway, yes, they're talking about General Flynn and a little bit about tax reform and very little, if anything at all, about the sexual harassment allegations going around and around. They seem to be touching almost every public eye industry, if you know what I mean. And that's a shame. Anything that they can, the left or progressives or news media, however you want to describe them, to take away, to distract from anything that could incriminate or expose them for who they are and what they are. So, unfortunately, General Flynn was their fall guy. And it was a shame. All the hoopla, all the big deal, all for nothing. Yes, he did get charged for lying to the FBI, but when you think about it, not even James Comey, at the time that he was still the FBI director, thought that there was a problem with what he had said. He understood that there was a mistake as far as what he had said, but as far as the rules go, and speaking with the Russians, or any other country for that matter, there was nothing wrong with that. And yet, General Flynn's life has been flipped upside down and inside out. The poor man is broken and broke literally. He has to sell his home. They threatened if he wouldn't speak with Mueller, Mueller threatened him basically that he would drag his son into it. So he's losing his home, he's broke, and then they want to bring the son. So, bullshit. I mean, it's BS, really. For what? For one charge of lying to the FBI, that's it. That's it. Nothing else. And yet you have these other networks, news networks, if that's what you want to call them. I call them story networks because they're really good at telling a story. Not always believable, but it's a story nevertheless. And their story is bringing into account the Logan Act, which has no bearing whatsoever on any of it pertaining to General Flynn. The Logan Act refers to a civilian, a private person. General Flynn was not a private person at the time that this occurred, so there is nothing of that particular act that pertains to General Flynn or that they can later bring up and charge General Flynn with. They only have the one thing, and that's it. And that's a shame. Special Counsel Mueller, there's nothing special about him. I was listening to Mark Levin earlier today, and those were his words. And I agree. Mueller's been allowed to run amok, taking prisoners, so to speak, like Manafort, by gunpoint in the wee hours of the morning. For what? For some banking issues that he had years ago? Not saying that the crime doesn't have to be paid for, but I'm just saying he wasn't a killer. Manafort didn't kill anybody. It was a banking crime of some sort. Not worthy of being woken up in the wee hours, having your home searched, having your wife searched, having yourself searched, guns drawn. And for what? The dog and pony show. The Mueller dog and pony show. He's got nothing. After all this time, he's got nothing. And the taxpayers are paying huge dollars for him to come up with nothing. And none of these things that he's bringing, that he's brought these people in so far, have anything to do with Russian collusion and Donald Trump. Nothing. And yet the media is talking about connecting the dots. Whether or not they're going to charge Flynn with the Logan Act. I mean, they're talking to talk. Talking, filling the airwaves with hot air. And they should be ashamed of themselves. Honestly. CNN talks about they have integrity. Well, that's no integrity that I've ever seen before. They say they're not fake news. Well, when you report a story condemning a man under an espionage act that he does not qualify for, but you're already throwing him under the bus there, that's fake news. Next on our list of topics, of minor topics, is the tax reform by the Senate. Those guys almost had to pull an all-nighter. Heaven forbid, that was probably one of the hardest days that they've worked, or nights that they've worked since being elected into office. Who knows? I would bet yes, but who knows? Who knows what they do with their time otherwise during regular session. I know what they're busy with right now, and they've got investigations up the yin yang, and they're all busy in their different committees investigating each other. Idiots. What can I say? Oh boy. So it was officially passed on December 1st. It's a version of the Tax Cuts and Job Act. And on the November 16th, 2017, the House had passed its version of the act. Both plans are based on the Trump administration's plan presented on September 27th. But the Senate plan cuts the corporate rate from 20% to, I'm sorry, from 35 to 20%. In 2019. The House plan does so in 2018. So the Senate plan wants to delay it for a year before it goes into effect, whereas the House wants to put it into effect lickety split. Let's get it going. Chop chop. Both plans cut income tax rates, double the standard deduction, and eliminate personal exemptions. It's almost like they, let's get further on and then we'll talk about that. The Senate plan keeps the current 7 income tax brackets, but lowers some taxes. These rates will revert back to the current rate in 2025, so they're not even permanent. Some of the income tax ratings go like this. Currently, for a single person making a anywhere from zero to $9,500. Currently, it's 10%. And with the Senate plan, it stays at 10. If you're married, filing joint, same thing. If you make zero to $20,000, it stays at 10. If you're making anywhere from $9,500 to $38,000, then it's currently 15, and the Senate dropped it down to 12. Married joint, beginning at 19, all the way up to $77,000, same thing. It doesn't really change too much as far as the whole single and married joint. They're both the same. So when I read off the one, it's the same. So currently, for people making $38,000 to $59,000 or $60,000, currently it's 25, and the Senate's plan will drop it to 25 even. Oh, big deal. Yeah, there's not too much of a big difference. When they said that they were going to lower the rates some, they weren't kidding. Because I'm seeing very little difference as we go down here. Currently, 33% dropping to 32.5. The next row for $200,000 to $500,000, beginning at 33% to 35%, and it stays the same. If you make $500,000 plus, currently it's 39.6. Senate says you'll pay 38.5. Oh, big whoop. Big whoop, big whoop. No wonder they wanted to wait for a year for it to go into effect, because they're going to be hiding or working to try and fix it. I don't know. Ridiculous. Now, the House plan reduces the number of tax brackets to 4 and lowers 3 rates. I like the kind of 4 bracket thing going on there, because really that simplifies it a lot. Because 7, I mean, what's the big deal? So you lower a few taxes, you don't put it into effect for a year, and it doesn't make that much of a big deal. And then before you know it, it's over in 2025. So next on the Senate plan. So the House plan and their tax income rate currently at 10 to 15% for single people earning about $45,000 a year. Same for married joint at $89,000 a year. With a house bill, you'll pay 12%. The next bracket is our people, singles, earning $45,000 to $200,000. Currently paying 25 to 28% tax, will be even 25%. Married joint is $90,000 to $260,000. Same thing, same bracket, 25 to 28%. The house bill, 25%. Now, if you're single and you're earning anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000, the current rate for you is 28 to 39.6%. With the house tax reform, it will drop. It kind of just puts it in the middle. It's 35%, it says. So you go from anywhere paying 28 to 39.6 and going to 35 flat there. If you're making $500,000 and you're single, your rate does not change. It remains at 39.6%. Married joint, same thing. Married joint at $260,000 to $100,000, or to $1 million, is the flat 35, just like the single. So both tax plans eliminate most itemized deductions. That's good. And the exceptions are charitable contributions, mortgage interest, property taxes, and retirement savings. Current mortgage holders aren't affected by either plan. The house plan limits the deduction up to $500 for new mortgages, so that's good. And that would affect just about 6% of mortgages, mostly in large cities. The Senate plan allows the deduction to remain up to $1 million, but eliminates it for home equity loans. And the Senate plan expanded their deduction for medical expenses for 2017 and 2018. So that should make some people happy. And it allows taxpayers to deduct medical expenses that are 7.5% or more of income. And there are a lot of people that have that, so that's good. Currently, people can deduct medical expenses that are 10% or more of their income. And at least 8.8 million used the deduction in 2015. The House plan eliminated the deduction. And the group AARP opposes the elimination because it hurts seniors the most, and I agree. They're more likely to have chronic illnesses or to be in nursing homes. So they kind of need that money there, that deduction. On November 14th, the Senate added a repeal of the Obamacare tax on those without health care or health insurance, I'm sorry. And the Congressional Budget Office estimates 13 million people would drop health insurance. Well, we know how that goes, because those 13 million were probably people that didn't want it in the first place, but were forced, mandated, required to have it, like everybody else. So now they can choose not to. And I would guess many of the millennials would choose not to because they're usually healthy. Both plans eliminate the deduction for state and local taxes. And you may have heard, as far as the high tax states like California and New York would get dinged. I live in California, so they're estimating 44 million people getting hurt by this in those states. Well, then those state governors need to get their act together and start lowering the taxes in the state. Quit draining the people. You can't suck blood out of a turnip, and they're trying. So it's nobody's fault but the state and local government. Don't blame the federal government, because in actuality, when you look at the grand picture of this portion that I'm talking about, they did the right thing, because it's going to help a lot more people than will be hurting. And the 44 million people that will be hurting can be or find relief through their state. So that's on their state government to fix that for them. The Senate plan allows corporations, unfortunately not small businesses, to deduct state and local taxes. Both plans allow taxpayers to deduct state property tax deductions up to $10,000. See, I'm not understanding. It's like they're giving with one hand and taking away with the other. And yet they were all patting themselves on the back. Good job, good job. We passed it. We got the votes. So that's what it comes down to now. We got the votes. Who cares whether or not it's going to work for the majority of the people? We got the votes. That's what counts. Yeah, all right. Celebrate. Woohoo, beers all around. No. Can't treat these things like the elections. It's not a popularity contest. It's not a who gets all the votes. Yeah, we don't care what you're going to do for anybody or how you're going to work with the people to make this country better. What counts is you got the votes. Yeah. Please. Oh, my. Hey, I see No Way Out Radio there covering for each other, that is. Hey, how you doing? Theater DC style. You know it. So what are anybody's thoughts, your thoughts, Noeg, about the IRS filing your taxes for you. I mean, they get all the documents that you receive. They have to, in order to make sure that you're doing your taxes right. But I don't want to have to pay to do my own taxes. Basically, I have to do my own taxes and then pay them on top of that, and perhaps even pay somebody else to do the taxes to pay the IRS. It just doesn't make sense. When they can do it, they have the numbers, and they could probably do it faster. And since we get the same documentation, I think it would be better to verify their numbers for a change. Wouldn't that be something? I would love that. I have a short video that explains it. It's called Taxes. Here we go.
What's that you were saying about how taxes could be easy?
Well, think about it. Taxes are a bill the government charges you. So why do you have to do all the math? Imagine if we did that with any other bill.
How much do I owe you?
You tell me.
Divide number of toppings by cheese consumption? $12?
Wrong. Now you're going to jail.
Bogus.
Instead of making you fill out a complicated return, why doesn't the government just tell you how much you owe?
Well, because they need to know my income, my interest on my savings, all the numbers that are on those forms.
Newsflash, they already do. Employers, banks, and other financial institutions already send detailed records to the IRS.
Okay, we just got Hank's W-2s and 1099s. I could calculate his tax bill myself. Nah, I'll just wait quietly while he sends me the exact same information.
The government could quite literally do your taxes for you. It's an idea called return-free filing. Instead of the government checking your work, you'd check theirs. And it would make taxes look more like this.
Ooh, honey, our taxes came.
Oh. Just need to deduct that work trip to Toledo, and we're done.
Hey, think we have time for some wild bedpost-rattling sex?
Why not? Our April's wide open.
Return-free filing is already used by countries around the world and could allow millions of Americans like you to do your taxes for free in just 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, those bozos in Washington would never go for an idea that makes that much sense.
Actually, return-free filing bills are introduced in Congress all the time, and both Barack Obama and Ronald Reagan pushed for it.
Yes, we can.
Tear down this wall of paperwork.
Wow, that must be the only thing those guys would agree on. Okay, I'm sold. Give me return-free filing.
Sorry. The makers of tax software like TurboTax and H&R Block spend a buttload of money to make sure it never happens.
Tax software industry. You play us to make your taxes easier, so we pay lobbyists to make sure they stay complicated.
Citizens, we feel your pain. Filing your taxes is just too darn fun. Everything's great. We're changing nothing.
These calculating companies have lobbied to kill multiple return-free filing bills over the past decade.
And they're using my money to do it? Well, that's shameless.
And it gets worse.
This is Jessica Huseman, a reporter at ProPublica who's covered this story.
The tax prep industry actually created a front group called the Free File Alliance that lets you file your taxes for free. It's supposed to be available to two-thirds of the tax-paying public, but almost no one uses it. That's because the system is confusing, the IRS doesn't market it, the tax companies have no incentive to push it themselves, and a sneaky opt-in option allows them to push their paid products.
Don't use the free option. It's too hard. Pay me instead.
But I won't return free filing. Like you were talking about.
Well, here's the worst part. The tax industry negotiated an exclusive deal that prevents the federal government from offering return-free filing or any free system of tax filing so long as the Free File Alliance exists.
So you're saying the government could be doing my taxes for me, for free, but TurboTax and H&R Block are working like crazy to stop that from happening?
Exactly. Instead, you're stuck doing your taxes yourself with this guy.
Get ready to spend all your Aprils with me.
Hey, Adam here. If you like that, be sure to watch all new episodes of Adam Ruins Everything every Tuesday at 10 on True TV.
Pretty cool, I thought. Why not? I do my own. No way, says I do my own and let them fix it. Last year they sent me back the 750 plus 300 more. I say let them do what they are paid for. All right. Yeah, it is cool. I'll have to look more into that, but that kind of caught my eye, and I wasn't sure if anybody else was aware of that, you know, as far as that option that was offered and the possibilities of where to take tax reform. Not that anybody in Washington would actually listen. They're too busy, you know, bouncing their foreheads off one another. I don't know what they're doing over there. So I thought I would dedicate the majority of the show to learning about net neutrality. Over the last month or so, I've been listening to the different BTR channels, and I would say a lot of them discussed net neutrality, but unfortunately, the discussions were about the talking points. People going back and forth about the talking points and that net neutrality is bad. Why is it bad? Because they're going to throttle it. Well, what are they going to throttle? They throttle the internet. How are they going to throttle it? Well, they're going to slow it down, so you're going to have to pay more, and it's going to stifle the marketplace, and everybody's going to have to pay more, and so, and that was it. And that's more or less the conversation that had gone on rather than the policies that are actually being proposed in net neutrality. So not that I know everything, because I don't, but when there's a particular subject of interest, and in this case, it should be everybody's interest because it's not a Democrat or Republican thing. It's an internet thing. This is our lifeline nowadays, people. The technology is there for the taking. The access to the information that we have now is maybe a little bit limited than when it first began, but nevertheless, it's unimpeded at this moment. And we want to keep it that way. Net neutrality, it goes much deeper than just the throttling. And so I thought I would take some time to look up the proposed rulemaking and see what's going on with that. Some people related it to the SOPA and net neutrality that had taken place of, 2014, 2015. And yes, and at that time it was say no. And so we defeated the SOPA. And the net neutrality, unfortunately, was passed. And now somehow or some way or for some reason, now people are saying, no, don't get rid of it. Keep it, leave it alone. Don't fix it if it's not broken. Well, it wasn't broken in 2015, and somebody tried to fix it by the name of Chairman Wheeler. He was the chairman of the FCC at that time. And him and Obama were in cahoots. And so they tweaked it, not in a good way. So anyway, I have the official docket here from the Federal Communications Commission. It is docket WC number 17-108 in the matter of restoring internet freedom. They allowed for a comment period. In actuality, they had to extend it, and they did. And I believe it just ended. And however they end up voting, it's still important for people to know what it is. Because we don't know what's coming down the pike later on. And if it remains under what they call a Title II, which I will explain, under the telecommunications, we're going to see a lot more regulation. So let's begin with the background. And it says, long before the commercialization of the internet, federal law drew a line between the heavily regulated common carrier services and a more lightly regulated services that went beyond mere transmission. And starting in 1966, isn't that interesting? The commission initiated the computer inquiries, which created a dichotomy between basic and enhanced services. Basic services offered pure transmission capability over communication paths that is virtually transparent in terms of its interaction with the customer supplied information, and were regulated under Title II of the Communications Act. Enhanced services were any offering over the telecommunications network, which is more than a basic transmission service. In an enhanced service, for example, the computer processing applications are used to act on the content, code, protocol, and other aspects of a subscriber's information, unlike basic services. The commission at that time found that enhanced services should not be regulated under the Act. So what that paragraph is telling you is that the basic services are like your telephone. They should be under Telecommunications Title II for the regulations. Enhanced services are information services. That's internet. So 2 years later, the federal courts would draw a similar line in resolving the government's antitrust case against AT&T. And the modification of final judgment of 1982 distinguished between telecommunications, which Bell operating companies could offer when actually regulated by tariff, and information services included data processing and other computer-related services. Oh yeah, and electronic publishing services, which Bell operating companies were prohibited from offering entirely. A few years later, in the Telecommunications Act of 1996, it intended to promote competition and reduce regulations. And get this, it was President Clinton and Congress who drew a line between lightly regulated information services and more heavily regulated telecommunication services. They found that the internet and other interactive computer services have flourished to the benefit of all Americans with a minimum of government regulations. So Clinton was actually on the good side, saying, yeah, it seems to be working out pretty good with light-handed regulations. So they declared it the policy of the United States to promote the continued development of the internet and other interactive computer services and other interactive media, and to preserve the vibrant and competitive free market that presently exists for the internet and other interactive services, unfettered by federal or state regulation. Yay, one for Clinton. That'll probably be the only one I ever give him, as far as the yays. I guess people can do some good in their lifetime, huh? So that's what happened then. And then Congress weighed in again 2 years later, and there were five senators: John Ashcroft, Wendell Ford, John F. Kerry, Spencer Abraham, and Ron Wyden. They wrote the commission that nothing in the 1996 Act or its legislative history suggests that Congress intended to alter the current classification of internet and other information services or to expand traditional regulations to new and advanced services. These five members further warned that if the commission subjected some or all information service providers to telephone regulation, it seriously would chill the growth and development of advanced services to the detriment of our economic and educational well-being. Whoa! So why are the Democrats so hell-bent on keeping that neutrality? Because it does just the opposite. Oh boy, I don't even think they can make up their own minds. It's whatever the lobbyist tells them, the wind blows, and then they go that way. So for the next 16 years, the commission repeatedly followed their advice. Left it alone, that's good. Opting for a light touch approach to the internet that favored discrete and targeted actions over traditional preemptive sweeping regulations of the internet service providers. So instead of just putting a blanket over everything, they were being careful with that. So that's good. 1998, there was a Stevens report that also reinforced that, those rules. And then came along in 2002, the cable modem order. The commission classified broadband internet access service over cable systems as an internet or interstate information service. So cable modem was interstate information service. The commission did so based on the functions that the cable modem service makes available to its end users, on the fact that the telecommunications component is not, however, separable from the data processing capabilities of the service. So as long as there's data or information being transmitted, they're going to keep it under the enhanced. And this is because telephone, landline, mobile, it's a more pure transmission, if you will. Whereas internet requires other elements, components, because it's information, it's data, it's other things involved in that transportation of services. So with the cable modem, in June 2005, the Supreme Court decisively upheld that 2002 classification. Yay! And then 2004, the chairman by the name of Michael Powell announced four principles for internet freedom to further ensure the internet would remain a place for free and open innovation with minimal regulations. And these four internet freedoms include the freedom to access lawful content, the freedom to use applications, the freedom to attach personal devices to the network, and the freedom to obtain service plan information. So here we come upon 2005 with the wireline broadband classification order. They also put that one where it needed to be, and that was under the enhanced. I'm trying to get through this to where we are talking about the current policies and how those are going to change. So I'm kind of going through these to let you know how we got to where we are. So, excuse me. In 2005, the commission also unanimously endorsed the four internet freedoms as well during that time. And they called it the Internet Policy Statement. And then 2006, the BPL-enabled broadband order. And they concluded that it also belonged under that enhanced services. That's good. Now we're up to 2007, where wireless broadband internet came in, and they classified that as an information service again. 2008, we ran into a little problem with Comcast BitTorrent order. Now the commission sought to directly enforce federal internet policy consistent with the Internet Policy Statement that we just talked about, finding Comcast actions contravene federal policy by significantly impeding consumers' ability to access the content and use the applications of their choice. In 2010, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit rejected the commission's action, holding that the commission had not justified its action as a valid exercise of ancillary authority. So Comcast was the beginning of challenging the free and open internet by beginning to limit some of their services. So in response to that, the commission said, no, we need to come up with something so that we can keep that free and open internet going. So they adopted in 2010 the Open Internet Order, where once again the commission specifically rejected more heavy-handed regulations of broadband internet access service. Instead, the Open Internet Order relied on, among other things, newly claimed regulatory authority under Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act. And this was to establish no blocking, no unreasonable discrimination rules, as well as a requirement that broadband internet access service providers publicly disclose accurate information regarding the network management practices and the commercial terms of its broadband internet access service. And in doing so, the commission distinguished between fixed and mobile broadband internet access service. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice today. Goodness. So they had reasoned that the latter presents special considerations that suggest differences in how and when open internet protections should apply. So far we're on the right track. Then in 2014, the DC court vacated the no blocking and no unreasonable discrimination rules adopted in the open internet order, finding that the rules impermissibly regulated broadband internet access service providers as common carriers, in conflict with the commission's prior determination that broadband internet access service was not a telecommunications service, and that mobile broadband internet service was not a commercial mobile service. And the DC court nonetheless upheld the transparency rule. And they claimed that the commission had authority to regulate broadband internet access service providers, well, under Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act. And they suggested that no blocking and no unreasonable discrimination rules might be permissible if the internet service providers could engage in individualized bargaining. So later that year, the commission embarked yet again down the path of rulemaking, proposing to rely on Section 706 of that Telecommunications Act to adopt enforceable rules using the court's roadmap. So I bet everyone's curious as to what this 706 is. So let's find out. I have it here. Luckily, they have notes at the bottom of each page so that people can find out what things are, and that's a good thing. So, 706. Is the Internet Policy Statement that we read earlier. Okay, there it is. Boy, I have a short memory. Oh my. Okay. Hey, Chief, I see you there in the chat room. Cool, great, super. So moving on. Now are in November of 2014. Then President Obama called on the FCC to what? Reclassify consumer broadband service under, Title II of the Telecommunications Act. 3 months later, the commission adopted the Title II order, reclassifying broadband internet access services from information services to telecommunication services. In doing so, the commission found it necessary to forbear from enforcing the vast majority of rules adopted under Title II, including 30 statutory provisions, and to render over 700 codified rules inapplicable. Whew. That's a lot. The commission adopted no blocking, no throttling, and no paid prioritization rules, as well as a general internet conduct standard and enhancements to the transparency rule. In 2016, a divided panel of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the Title II order in United States Telecom Association versus FCC, with the D.C. Circuit denying petitions for rehearing of the case en banc, they said. ENBANC, en banc. So brings us to the ending of public utility regulations of the internet. that little history there was a lot. It seemed like there were a lot of people fighting to keep it free and open, and then along came Title II in 2014. Unexpected and sad, but nevertheless not lost. You see, Americans cherish a free and open internet. And for almost 20 years, the internet flourished under a light-touch regulatory approach. Its framework, something that our nation elected leaders put in place on a bipartisan basis. President Clinton and a Republican Congress passed the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which established the policy of the United States to preserve it, as I was mentioning earlier. And for the most part, we still have it, but it's, it's in jeopardy. During this time, the internet underwent rapid and unprecedented growth. Internet service providers, which are ISPs, invested over $1.5 trillion in the internet ecosystem. And American consumers enthusiastically responded. And it exploded. And now, I'm not so sure I'm really thrilled about that, because along with that came commercial advertising. One of the reasons I don't watch TV is, number one, it's all garbage. Number two, it's all garbage filled with ads. So it's more garbage. Almost every website that you visit nowadays is filled with ads, pop-ups, annoying, loud sometimes, but you can't avoid them. It wasn't so inundated before, but because of the economic advantages that were available, people capitalized on them. And I guess you can't really fault them for that. It's a difficult thing to have to manage the internet when you think about it, because you don't want to put too many constraints on it, limitations, because those can get out of control if put in the wrong hands. Somebody can get crazy with the rules and regulations, depending on who has the gavel. On the other hand, consumers have to tolerate annoying nuisance, I guess you could call them, ads and other things. And sure, you can visit other websites, but pretty soon, how many are you going to go through before there are no more commercialists? Now you can pay for ad blocking to where you don't receive those ads, but again, now you're going to have to pay for that. So my controller that I used to use for the TV has a worn out mute button on it. It drives my husband bonkers, because every time a commercial came on, I'd hit that mute button. Every single time, if there's something that I am interested in, then I will turn the volume up. But don't blast them on me, please. Drives me absolutely bonkers. Okay, so I'm looking for here, through my docket, for the pages. 75 pages long, folks. From intro, background, all the technical difficulties of the internet travels and transportation, I guess you could say, and everything else detailed, which we can bypass because we just want to know what it is, where it came from, why we're in this boat right now, why people are believing that they're trying to fix something that's not broken, and the long-term effects of the decision that will be made on this. So let's see, page 60. Let me scroll down here. We're going to take another short break. I'll be right back with more Net Neutrality 101. Oh, yes. I have some Red Skelton for everyone on Johnny Carson.
What's the favorite character the kids ask for nowadays? Mean Little Kid, like, Freddy the Freeloader?
Junior?
Sure.
Junior, the Mean Little Kid.
Yeah.
Junior says, Kids, Junior, are you pulling that cat's tail? No, I'm not pulling the cat's tail. I'm holding on. He's doing the pulling.
How's Clem? Clem.
Clem. They like Clem Cadiddlehopper. Because, Well, sir, since I saw you last, I got married at a military wedding. There were guns there, let's put it that way. I met my wife through her brother. He says to me, would you like to meet one of my sisters? I said, you got sisters? He says, I got two. One's name's Lassie, the other's Hortense. I says, Lassie's a dog. He says, wait till you see Hortense.
Of the letter that George Bush wrote to Saddam Hussein.
Oh, yes. We were wondering where that was. You had it. Can you reveal? Without affecting national security.
I don't know why they found this offensive. It starts off, dear oil sucker. I don't know.
And that man's name, Tarek Aziz. Doesn't seem like they have a little thing he's saying, like, we want peace. And underneath it says, he's lying.
It's Joe Asuzo.
You want to think about the whole thing, though, basically. You want to solve problems in the Middle East, you send John Gotti. He goes, Saddam, how you doing, babe? Okay, here's the deal. You get out of Kuwait, I give you Jersey. Okay. Bingo, he's out the next damn day. All of a sudden, wow, things start happening. Mingo, mingo, mingo. And I know that they've got Quail locked up in some back room going, okay, let's go over it again, okay? Okay, ready? Okay, here we go. Let's go over it one time, okay? Assad, you did. Okay, try it again. Aziz, what did he say? No, try it again. Assad, you did. No, try it one more time. Hussein, nobody. Okay, try it again. Gaddafi, God bless you. Not that one. I don't know. You have to kind of go, why is this? This is very strange.
Poor Quail. Remember once when they said they were going to send him to Central America, and 3 days later they found him wandering around Ohio?
He's been on more cruises than a Jewish grandmother. As soon as he comes home, he goes, hi, I'm back. Oh, okay. Send him out the door, and he comes back with a little statue with a, you know.
Yes.
Look what I found, Marilyn. Give me that. Grind that down.
One of those questions you're going to direct at me. And direct it over here.
This is for the car. Are we going to disappear in a hole if I get this wrong?
No, but you have a lot of, you know, we've talked about, what do we talk about? It's something you're good at.
Well, I can't do that here.
Physics and...
Why, thank you, thank you, thank you. Take a bow, take a bow, take a bow. Oh, yes, having a little fun on Saturday night. hello. Oh, okay, we've got Chief getting to know No Way Out there, Simple Facts of Life, Sunday nights. Got No Way Out on Friday nights. I'm sorry, Sunday nights. And I will have them plug their shows in the chat room. You know what? I'm also going to give you the website I'm on, which came from the FCC, so you can follow along or read on your own, because, as I said, all the details and nitty-gritty, I won't be going over all the technicalities of it, just the important parts that apply to us, the general consumer. Okay. So we have Chairman Pai, who is the new chairman. When Chairman Wheeler had left, then Pai slid into his position as a temporary, and then candidate Donald Trump became President Donald Trump, and he said, now you shall be the chairman as a formality. So he took over the reins. Chairman Pai was not a big fan or proponent of net neutrality when it first had come out for many reasons. And he does give his statement. He includes that in this new one to show, you know, there wasn't anything back then that he's not saying now. He explains in his, also in here, what he wants to do, and he talks about, he went over the history, which I already read. Okay. And the internet wasn't broken in 2015. We are not living in a digital dystopia. Nonetheless, the FCC that year succumbed to pressure from the White House and changed course. Even though the FCC couldn't find any evidence of market failure, because they were saying that the free and open internet needed to be regulated. Because it wasn't generating business. I don't know how they could say that, but they did. Even after expanding their mobile connectivity from 1G to 2G to 3G to 4G. I mean, that opened up a whole new internet economy out there for, I don't know, they have Google and Facebook and Netflix and Amazon, all these type of websites that require fast internet. They put the heavy-handed regulations back in place. So for almost two decades, the internet was a success, and then it imposed upon all internet service providers, big and small, the heavy-handed regulatory framework designed during the Roosevelt administration to micromanage the AT&T telephone monopoly. So this is internet touches a lot of different areas, goes back, it draws history. And it has to do with telecommunications. So I can see why they would want to keep it under it, but not directly under the section Title II. The Title II regulations, utility-style regulations, are known as the proverbial sledgehammer being wielded against the flea, except that here there was no flea. It was running just fine. So today, Chairman Pai proposes to repeal the utility-style regulation of the internet. They propose to return to the Clinton-era light-touch framework that has proven to be successful. And they propose to put technologists and engineers rather than lawyers and accountants at the center of the online world. So that should make some people feel good. It should also have a lot of people saying, oh, I didn't know that. The evidence so far strongly suggests that this is the right way to go. Among our nation's 12 largest internet service providers, domestic broadband capital expenditures decreased by 5.6% or $3.6 billion between 2014 and 2016, the first 2 years of being under the Title II era. This decline is extremely unusual. It is the first time that such investment has declined outside of a recession in the internet era. To be sure, a study released by a pro-title special interest this week claimed that there had been no such decline. But that report makes basic mistakes, like counting network investment in Mexico as network investment in the United States. Again, this is Chairman Pai, and I'm reading from the docket, the FCC telecommunications docket, 17-60. Now, the investment pullback is affecting smaller providers, too. We've received letters from dozens of small IPSs, internet service providers, in case you didn't know what ISPs were. And so they received those letters explaining how the Title II hurts. 70 fixed wireless internet service providers say our challenges are exacerbated by the Title II order, which has significantly increased compliance burdens and regulatory risks through what? Heavy-handed regulation. that is rife with uncertainty. Bringing out that sledgehammer. Seven smaller mobile wireless providers tell us that the uncertainty surrounding the Title II regulatory framework for wireless broadband services hinders our ability to meet our customer needs, burdens our companies with unnecessary and costly obligations, and inhibits our ability to build and operate networks and rural development and deployment of innovative new offerings. And that was a huge thing that Chairman Pai had talked about in 2014 when these the Title II was imposed. And that was expanding out to rural areas, getting that internet to people who don't have it. They just don't have the lines out there. I mean, now we have wireless. I'm not sure how that works. But he wanted to make it available. So consider for a minute why these statements are important. These are 150 small ISPs, most of which Americans have not heard of. These are the very companies that are critical to injecting competition into the broadband marketplace. These are the very companies that are critical to closing the digital divide by building out in lower income rural and urban areas. Areas that too often don't see investment or are the first to see investment dry up. Excuse me. And again, these are the very companies that are telling us that the Title II makes it harder to connect Americans with digital opportunity. It puts consumers last, not first, to push these companies out of the marketplace and stifle competition. Ooh. I don't know if you heard those sirens that went by. That was kind of freaky. I was having a moment here with my internet net neutrality. Did you feel it? I was in it. I was in the moment. So in addition to proposing to reverse the Title II classification, we are also proposing to eliminate the so-called Internet Conduct Standard. This standard gives the FCC a roving mandate to review business models and prohibit service plans that benefit consumers. With this expansive authority, the FCC could investigate any provider for offering the public virtually any service that the agency might find problematic. And that's, in fact, what the FCC did. Within months of conferring this new authority upon itself, the FCC met the enemy. Consumer-friendly free data programs offered by several companies. Now, despite the then leadership of the agency having deemed some of these programs highly innovative and competitive, the FCC began investigating them, preventing consumers from getting something for free doesn't benefit consumers. Additionally, this authority lets bureaucrats question whether literally every network management decision is reasonable. So it's kind of like micromanaging. This is especially unwise when it comes to the network's future. Consider 5G, for instance, the next generation of wireless service. The Economist recently explained what this technology will require. Slicing the network into multiple logical networks, each optimized for a different user's needs. Having to hire lawyers to make sure your engineers don't run afoul of the FCC while pulling that off sounds like a recipe for disaster. That helps explain why Mark Anderson, the creator of the Netscape browser and prominent Silicon Valley venture capitalist, has said, if you have these pure net neutrality rules, you're not ever going to get a return on a continued network investment, which means you'll have to stop investing in the network. Today's notice is the start of a new chapter in the public discussion about how we can best maintain a free and open internet while making sure that ISPs have strong incentives to bring next generation networks and services to all Americans. I think that's fair. To reiterate, Chairman Pai says, this is the beginning of the process, not the end. The FCC is simply seeking comment on these proposals. We also ask questions about the existing bright line rules. Now, at the time this was released to the public, they gave a 90-day time span for comment. But again, that was extended over, that carried over into December. And this was released in September. So, let's see. Additionally, there are a few things that are different from the last time around. First, we are proceeding in a far more transparent way than the FCC did in 2015. Back then, it pushed through the 317-page Title II order before anyone outside this building was allowed to see it. The draft document I proposed to my colleagues has been available to the public online for 3 weeks. Indeed, the public has already submitted over 1 million comments on that draft. And I will go one step further and publicly commit to this. On my watch, any order we may adopt in this proceeding will also be made widely available well before a vote is called. You may agree or disagree with what the FCC is doing, but you have been and will be able to see what it is we're doing and why. Second, we aim to conduct credible cost-benefit analysis of our policy decisions. This simply wasn't done back in 2015. Indeed, the economic analysis in the Title II order was called wrong, unsupported, and irrelevant by the FCC's own chief economist at the time. This time, as we make our decisions, we will have our expert staff carefully review the evidence on investment and other variables. We will rely on a hyperbolic statements. We will rely not on hyperbolic statements about the end of the internet as we know it and 140 character commentary, but on that data. Finally, I'd like to thank the staff of the Wireline Competition Bureau, the Wireless Telecommunications. He lists a bunch of people that he wants to thank for all their help putting this together. Going forward, he says, I hope that we will not rush headlong into enacting bad rules. We are not confronted with an immediate crisis that requires immediate action. So it's not something that has to be done right away, especially if it's in the midst of disseminating the comments that may have suggestions towards or to be included or something with this enhanced services. Last Wednesday, he says, I took part in a public listening session in Skid Row. For those unfamiliar, Skid Row is in Los Angeles community, housing one of the largest homeless populations in the United States. It was there I met a fascinating woman who calls herself Frenchie. She would stop me about 3 times over the course of the evening, first going on about how much I looked just like my picture, next letting me know how happy she was that someone like me would not only visit, but listen. But the third time turned out to be the most telling. I was moments away from politely but firmly asking to be excused when Frenchie said something that made me pause. When she was without a home, in the traditional sense, she was able to secure an address, a stable personal email address, which helped to ground her and enabled her to keep in touch with the world through the power of the internet, the continuity, the identity, that stable electronic footprint was at times the only permanent presence she had when much in her physical life was in turmoil. She got through the hardest times, she said. Thanks to an open internet, Those very same connections led her to the services that appear to be providing her a more stable life. I also heard from Marco that night. The former filmmaker lost his family, his livelihood, and for a time struggled with mental health issues. He lived in Skid Row. But the doctor who made the greatest headway with his recovery was more than 200 miles away in Fresno. Rather than having to spend hours on public transportation, he was able to Skype with the therapist, and along with a friend in Argentina who spoke his language, and clinician who was willing to pronounce his name correctly. He had gotten through the hardest times thanks to the power of the open internet. How great is that? And he goes on with a few more stories. So I think that's fantastic. The internet does reach a lot of people. But there are also a lot of people who don't get it at this time. They don't have the cell towers. You would think with all the technology advances that we have, especially with satellite, there should be no excuse for not everybody at least having access to it. Whether they can afford it or not is a different story. But just because you may live out in the boonies doesn't mean that you're poor. I mean, you just may be a very private person. I would live out in the boonies if I could. Why not? It's scary almost sometimes interacting with people. You never know what's going to happen, what they're going to say, how they're going to receive what you say. That could be dangerous, very dangerous. So that is pretty much it. I'm scrolling through. I pretty much covered what needed to be said. Again, I put the link in the chat room. Does anybody have any questions about anything that they may have heard that I can help out with? Hey, Ron, I see Ron there in Crazy Nation Radio. Welcome. All right. Hey, I've got quite a few people listening tonight. Fantastic. DC spying on us. No way. I wouldn't doubt it. Why not? They have all kinds of technologies. One that's even more frightening. They proposed it under one, which was the technology like the Minority Report. They scrapped that and went with something better. And so they're looking into using that, and that is the facial expression recognition. And one more thing, what was the other one? Oh, goodness, and it really freaked me out. Oh, the DNA. The DNA, they're researching and exploring. If they take a pinprick of blood from you, process it in the lab, come back with your DNA, from that DNA, they are trying to create a photo of what you look like through that DNA. There are some actual police departments that are using this. It's not very accurate. The majority of them don't use it. Again, it's like a beta program, a tester. But the company that had created it has even said it's not very accurate. There's still a lot to be done with it in order to be able to create an accurate picture of what you look like just from your DNA. What do I say? I say BS. What if you have a twin? What if there's just no way? There's just not. It's not possible. And they can come up with maybe something similar, but nothing close. When you think about it, all of the garbage that we take in every day, from aspirin to, I don't know, drinking water for that matter, it alters our DNA. Changes our whole genome. It's not pure. And so to try and say, oh, yes, we've got this photo. We know who you are. And you were here at this place robbing this house. No, I was in Seattle. No, this is you, right? This is your picture. This is what you look like. This is you. I still was in Seattle. I don't know what you got. Okay, turn around. We're handcuffing you. Yep, control the people, Ron said. Absolutely. No doubt. Personally, I would rather go with a program like the Minority Report. At least it would be more accurate than trying to come up with a photo from a sample of saliva or blood. At least with the Minority Report, they were, you know, with the cameras around town everywhere that you go, taking facial expressions, logging those into the system, so that way they can match you up. And also the way you behaved. That's right. That was one of the main things. Behavioral things that you did, your regular routine. And if you were to step outside of that routine, and let's say that particular routine was recorded for you, and one day you decided to step out of that routine for some reason, why not? We're human. We do things spontaneously sometimes. Well, that's when the red flag goes up. Oh, he broke routine. What's going on? Something's going on. Whoop, 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 whoop. Set the alarms. Okay, now we got to keep an eye on this guy. Where is he going? What is he doing? Who is he talking to? Yeah, we saw him buy a shovel, some garbage bags. Mm-hmm. What's he up to? Six-pack of beer. Mm-hmm. Turns out the guy had a few days off, just happened to come up. He wanted to work on his yard. He needed a shovel to shovel the debris into the garbage bags. That's it. But he strayed from his routine. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Oh, my God. Lock him up. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, because of those actions, that behavior that wasn't his normal behavior, they would bring him in. They would question him. They would see if he was mental, if he was stable mentally. And they would hang on to him for a little bit to make sure. In fact, I have that report. Believe it or not, I saved it because it just blew my mind. And I thought, oh, I've got to hang on to this. And quite honestly, if you try and find it now, it's not there. I guess that's not surprising. Never mind. But they do talk about it. I'm searching for it now. It's got to be here. Do I have any callers? Is there anybody on the line? I didn't even check. Silly me. I see no one. All right. Well, let me play one last clip for another short break here while I search for that clip, and I will be right back.
This is Dan Dix here reporting for Press for Truth, and I hate to say it today, folks, but welcome to the New World Order. The beast system has arrived. For more than a decade here at Press for Truth, we have been warning about the coming cashless society and the fact that all of our information is eventually going to be merged into a single device and eventually implanted under our skin. For our safekeeping, of course. Well, this agenda just took a major leap forward as the Maldives government is now the first to introduce a single ID card that combines all the functions of a passport, a national ID card, a driver's license, health card, insurance card, and you can even make payments with it. It is certified by both the Bank of the Maldives and by MasterCard, which means that users can use this card for payments anywhere in the world. This new everything card has a chip which contains your biometric identification, including all 10 of your fingerprints. It has additional passport security features which allow the Maldives passport card to be used just like a regular passport, and it works already at all borders of the Maldives, including the new electronic gates.
Fidermalog, supporting law enforcement requirements with safe technology, is just as important as developing new installations for security checks. As we see here with the all-new biometric e-gate, which has been supplied for border control to the state of Brunei and to other countries. E-passports, ID cards, and boarding cards are combined with automatic fingerprint and face recognition. A fast 3D camera ensures the most secure automated progress.
So this one card to rule them all can be used as a passport, or it can be used as a driver's license, or a health card, or insurance card, or credit card. In fact, the possibilities are endless. The Controller General of Maldives Immigration, Mr. Mohammed Anwar, says the door is open for many other government departments and private companies to use our new passport card in the future. Research and development for the new card and its system has been done in close cooperation with the German company Dermalog, which is also known for its innovative biometric systems. The company name Dermalog is a blend derived from the Greek derma, for skin, and logistic, for mathematical logic. And they have emerged as the world leaders as far as speed and accuracy goes when it comes to matching up fingerprints. Dermalog now holds the world record for matching up fingerprints. They can do 914,959,553 in just 1 second. That's just under 1 billion fingerprints matched up in just 1 second. The website offers fingerprint scanners, automated fingerprint identification systems, automated biometric identification systems, and biometric solutions for both commercial and government. So if your government is interested, you can have a Dermalog election system, a secure identification system, biometric documents, biometrics in law enforcement, border management, and social service systems. And for the commercial side of things, the site says, this secure and trend-setting process is not only extremely convenient for customers, but once they have been registered, they no longer need to bring their purse for a spontaneous purchase. It goes on to say, since the fingerprint is not permanently saved as an actual image, but as an encoded template generated from the acquired image, privacy rights are not infringed. Say what? As well, there is no possibility for third parties to steal fingerprint images. Just believe it's on that. And no other institution can access saved data and use it for conducting comparisons. Again, you'll just have to trust us on that one. Gunther Mall, the founder and CEO, seen here looking mighty douchey standing beside his logo, has said, our multi-model ABIS, or Automated Biometric Identification System, combines several biometric methods. Here it is possible to highlight fingerprint recognition, face recognition, and iris recognition all at the same time. And when it comes to facial recognition, these guys are not messing around. Their systems can process 1.4 billion people within 14 seconds. Do you see now why Apple has just launched the iPhone X, which uses facial recognition to open it? In our video, The iPhone X Exposed, Biometric Identification is just the beginning. We outlined how they want to force this reality on us and why it needs to be rejected at every little incremental step that presents itself. I also recently put out Wireless Warfare Exposed, Declassified Military Doc Proves Smartphones Are Killing Mankind, where the title speaks for itself. So I'll leave a link in the description to both of these videos so that you can check them out, and I strongly advise that you do. As for the people of Maldives, they used to be known for their nice beaches and their wonderful holiday resorts on their very beautiful islands. But sadly, now it has become the birthplace of the New World Order's eventual global ID card system that all of humanity on this planet will be subjected to unless we continue to reject it and expose the true agenda. Total enslavement of the human race under the control of a global technocracy. Please share this video if you found the information useful, and be sure to click the like button.
Okay. Hey, Technocracy, that was, I did a show on that a while back. Check it out in the archives. Some good information there. Got it. No Way says got it. Cool. All right. So I put the links to the FAST program. Turns out there was a complaint filed against DHS and the FAST program. Apparently, there were some shenanigans going on with them not releasing information through FOIA. Somebody had requested the information, and they said, no, that's okay. We're all right. We don't need to get you that information. Well, of course, said, yeah, you do. Yes, you do. So they got it to them, and now it's released because they wanted to block it from being released. So it said some facts here on page 3 on this PDF complaint, court complaint. DHS Science and Technology Directorate, SNT, in parentheses, is the sponsor of the ongoing research program known as the FAST Project. The FAST Project is a minority-style initiative that aims to predict the probability that an individual who is not suspected of any crime might commit a future crime act. Is that right? Get inside my brain, can you? The techniques include the collection of personal information, including video images, audio recordings, cardiovascular signals, get out of my heart, pheromones, electrodermal activity, and respiratory measurements. Ooh, they're all up inside, aren't they? I don't think I like that. Not with electrodes, anyway. The agency will also collect biological and behavioral information from subjects as they engage in the daily activities. They had a trial program. The personal information of individuals covertly collected? Ooh, keyword red flag, whoop whoop, sirens, covertly collected, is then processed via secret algorithms for behavioral abnormalities. Wow, stepping all over my lips again. Yep, so they collect that stuff, put it together, and the agency claims that they indicate deceptive behavior or malintent. These scientists just need to stop it. I mean, they're thinking too much, like, I am God. I can do it all. Look at me. Never realizing what they're doing it to or who they're doing it to is a who and not a what. We're more than just science rats and labs. We're not there for the taking so they can try out their sick experiments. Give me a break. Holy cow. Good show, but I got to start my show. See ya. Oh, you have a show tonight. I guess he left. Well, I'm so glad that he stopped by. I'm so glad that I still have the two of you in my chat room and listeners on the line. Chat room isn't very busy tonight, though. But I guess that means you're listening, so that's good. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and close my show. That was the information I wanted to make sure that I had enough time to deliver it to you. If there's any questions that you have, again, about the net neutrality, there may be something that you heard and want to know if it's true or not, I can answer that for you. I have the correct documentation to look that up for you, clarify, justify, maybe even intensify your worries. Who knows? Let me see. Okay, let me see your show addresses, show titles, show times in the chat room, please. Listening and studying at the same time. Oh, good for you. Fantastic. Learning is always good. I enjoy listening to others. Give me a break. Me too. I do. That's why I like to bounce around to different channels. Doesn't matter who they are. I just want to see what they're talking about. And sometimes the discussion grabs me, and other times, you know, you never know. But Crazy Nation Radio is just about to be on, he said. There you go. PME. 8 p.m. Oh, Eastern time. Okay. Yes. That was Ron Reck from Crazy Nation. Is there no way out? Oh, I don't know. You know, that's a whole other subject there. You know, some people are just wrought with tragedy when they lose a loved one. And for some, it may sound morbid when I say, they're so lucky, they got to go home. Really, we should be happy for them, not sad. Yes, we will miss them, but they're having a great time. This is my show name. Yes, I know. Isn't that great? Makes it really simple. But people don't know that, though. You know, should they stop by the chat and if it's still open and they say, oh, what's that? Oh, there's two more shows listed. Anyway, gentlemen, I want to let you know that I corrected my YouTube channel. I have to post the new slideshow. adding more names to the list of recommendations to listen to for people. Your shows are on it. And Chief, I slowed it down a little bit so you can read in between the transitions. So that's cool. Trying to figure out what to talk about. Gosh, there's an... Really? Are there just too many things? You can't narrow it down? Or is there... You're just really having trouble. I mean, wow, things are going bonkers out there right now. Thank you, No Way. We'll see you later. Take care. Love you, babe. See you at your show. Chief. Well, I'll give you a call after the show. And it's hard to read fast. Yes, that's true. Why would you need to read fast? It's Saturday night. You have a whole day. Hugs and kisses, No Way. Whoops, I never do that right. There we go. I am not multitasking. I don't know how. Oh, back and forth. Okay, there we go. Alrighty. Okay, guys. Chief, I'll give you a call after the show. See what you're up to. Thank you for listening to Suzette Live Talk. As always, join me every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com. You're listening to Suzette LT, and the show is Suzette Live Talk. Hey, how about that? All right.